compensating for a minute.
This is the sound of E. coli splashing around in raw hamburger juice on your cutting board. And it looks like Mom just put the tomatoes and onions on there, too. Don't let E. coli mosh with your food. An estimated 3,000 Americans die from a foodborne illness each year. So always separate raw meat from vegetables on two cutting boards. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Hi everyone, you're listening to the WONI Weekly Update. Here are some events to look forward to. On Tuesday, September 23rd, join WONI for our vinyl swap event. This will be happening from 6 to 8 p.m. in the WONI station of Hunt Union. Also happening on Tuesday, head down to the Red Dragon Theater for a game of Trivia Tuesday, happening from 9 to 10 p.m. in Hunt Union. On Wednesday, join the store.
Hola, everybody out there in radio land. This is DJ Nos for Mark 2 on the morning show. What's in your pocket? 8 to 9 a.m. every morning here on WONI 90.9 FM, home of Red Dragon Radio in the basement of Hunt Union, keeping it locked. We have a very special guest today. Dan Butterman is here to talk all things Oneana. And in particular, I'll be asking questions about his mayoral candidacy for the city of Oneonta, but I'm gonna play a tune here to get everybody started and pumped up for the morning. Here's some Survivor, yo. All right, Survivor, Eye of the Tiger. Remember that? Rocky III. That was a good one. Clubber Lang, Mr. T coming in. Hulk Hogan's also, I believe, in the beginning of that movie. Anyways, we are here welcoming Dan Butterman. Hello, Dan Butterman.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, 100%. We love having guests here. In this type of spooky season heading into, it's not only spooky for Halloween, but it's spooky because it is the, election season, and some of that is spooky for some of us.
Not for me. I'm excited about it.
That's a good thing. So we're going to ask him a few questions here, just for those people who don't know who Dan is. Going to find out a little bit about him, what his dealio is, and then dig into some of the things he's been doing recently and plans for the future. So, Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of upbringing, all things Dan.
All things. And you said we had 45 minutes, so I'll keep it short.
Sure.
So I moved to Oneonta in 2011. My wife got a call from Harwood College to come teach music, and we thought, we'll give it a try. And about 10 seconds after we got here, we knew we loved it, and this was the place that we wanted to be. Before that, we were living in Texas for a few years, and before that, we were in Arizona. That's where I was born and raised, and that's where I met my wife, Ana Laura.
Wow, where in Arizona?
I grew up in Prescott, Arizona.
Okay.
And I went to school in Tucson.
Oh, nice.
For music. I was a music major, clarinet performance.
Amazing.
And I met my wife in the pit orchestra for Carousel, sat right next to each other.
And,
yeah, got her attention. I played the right notes, I guess.
That's amazing. Carousel, what a sweet, that's a sweet thing.
Yeah, and then we played the second, that's where we met, and then we played another musical the following year called She Loves Me, again, sat next to her. So.
Wow, look at this. It's like a perfect love story.
Yeah, well, it was. It's still playing, so it's a good,
amazing.
It's a good story to have. I grew up in a family business. My parents went to ASU. They went to the other university in Arizona, up north there in Tempe. And, you know, plans change in wonderful ways. Like you make plans, and then you basically just have to throw them out because life has its own ideas for you. And my mom went to college. She thought she was going to be an art teacher. My dad thought he was going to be a lawyer. They met, and things changed. And for 50-plus years now, they've been candle makers. And that's how I was brought up, was in the candle business. And you might think, well, that's just a garage business. And, yes, that's how it started. But in its heyday, I think it had about almost 80 employees. And so it was a business that was taking care of our family, but also the families of all those employees. And so I got to learn firsthand the importance of business ownership and the responsibilities that the owners of those businesses have to the people that give them their time and their effort to make it a success. And so I carry many of those lessons I learned in that business growing up, making candles, selling candles, doing everything candles until
candles.
I left for school.
Yep. Everything's coming up candles.
Yep.
I've never met anybody who is a professional candle maker in that thing. That's amazing.
You can. Go to candlefactorystore.com. You'll see the best candles you'll ever find.
And that business is still going?
Still going.
Amazing. Incredible.
Yep.
Okay, so candles, meet the wife, love story. Moved to Oneonta 2011, and then what happens with Dan at this point?
So in 2011, when we got the call to come here, it was just sort of a try it and see. We weren't sure what the long game would be. We had one daughter at the time that was born in Texas, and she was about a year and a half when we came. And like I said, we really liked it here. It's sort of an open arms community to us, and we really felt welcomed, and we wanted to make it work. It's a small community compared to Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And my job, we sort of hedged our bets a little bit. So my job was at Geico at the time, and I kept that job, and I transferred to the Woodbury office in Long Island. So I was commuting back and forth for that first year between Long Island and Oneonta.
Ooh.
And we weren't sure because she had a contract and if it would renew or if we would stay. We weren't sure. So I kept that job because at Geico, there's a number of offices. And I had a pretty good run there. So I didn't want to let it go without having some thought and experience with what life might be like in Oneonta. But another thing happened for us. It was a friend of ours that got us this opportunity to come to Oneonta in the first place because it was a colleague from University of Arizona that had a job at Hartwick. And there was an opening and thought of Ana, so here we are. And then as life goes on, one of her students in the class became friends with her as a student who worked here, Nancy Tarr, who was completing her degree. And they became friends and started talking. And this opened up this opportunity where one coffee, one lunch later, I had a job at New York Central Mutual in Edmiston. And that was in 2012. And it was at that moment that we were sort of now all in Oneonta. And I knew once I was sort of all in a community someplace with my own family. And by then we had a second daughter, so we had two. And I wanted to get involved right away. And that was in the presidential election year, 2012, with Obama and Romney. So I just simply looked up the campaigns that were going on and called the Democratic Party and said, how can I get involved? And they said, well, we're doing phone banking for Julian Tribeman, who was the candidate that year for Congress against Chris Gibson. So they had a campaign office. I forget where it is now. I think in the Clinton Plaza.
Okay.
And I went down and made phone calls for them. And then afterwards, they had a party. And then before you know it, you're meeting people and you're getting more and more involved. And then you're before you know it, you're completely involved. And I've enjoyed every part of it. It's been an experience. And that's sort of how things got started with me in the community in Oneonta. Was once I was locked in with working at New York Central Mutual. My wife was locked in at Hartwick. We had our second daughter, and we were getting involved. And so things just started to take off from there.
Amazing. And then, so how long were you at that job for? Are you still at that job? What's going on with that?
No, I'm no longer at New York Central Mutual. I worked there for almost 12 years. Starting last year, though, I moved to another company called Markel, which does commercial insurance primarily and among other things. So they're a different beast than New York Central Mutual. I had a sort of a change in philosophy, if you will, on my views on my career, my primary career, which is in insurance. The pandemic really changed quite a bit of things. And one thing is how we work. And at New York Central Mutual, we were forced to shut down. So I worked from home for 2 years. And they started to reopen. And I started to think, well, a lot of companies are doing the same thing. Maybe this is an opportunity where I can now explore other career opportunities, but in a remote setting. So I can still be a part of a company that is in a different area of insurance, because New York Central is primarily focused on personal home and auto with a little bit of commercial. So I wanted to expand and grow and try something new. And Markel is an international company with many offices and a remote work option. So I decided to make a go for it. I think it's where my philosophy changed a little bit, in that it's working from remote can be a benefit to small communities around the country. Because it's sort of an import-export. You're importing professional labor into that area that might not otherwise be able to get there. And also, I think with insurance, I think it's important for insurance to be diversified and spread out. And because the policies that are sold by insurance companies benefit the customers in those communities. But the big part of insurance is that they also hold on to a lot of money before they pay the claims. And
yes,
they invest it. And it's a benefit to our communities when they invest it. They invest in bonds that which fix our roads and pay for our schools. And that's all the benefit, the economic benefit of insurance. So I kind of felt that it's good for a company to not centralize its workforce so that, you know, only certain areas get the benefit of the salaries and benefits that are paid to the workers of insurance companies. And so I was drawn to Markel because they were spreading out, and that meant that the benefits were extending to other communities, not just through the policy work.
And this is commercial, right?
Correct. I do construction insurance. Yeah.
Great. Cool. So with that being said, and you also, you're teaching still, right?
I am. I like to play in a few sandboxes. I also teach up at Harvard College on a very much a part-time basis. I teach in the business department. I do a rotation of classes. Right now I'm teaching negotiations and business law.
Okay, cool.
And then I also teach the business of insurance and HR management and organizational behavior.
And clarinet, right?
Oh, yeah, and clarinet, yeah, too. I also teach clarinet, yes.
Which is amazing. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's great. This is why I feel very lucky to be an Oneonta. I get to do a career that I find interesting, for which I can be a part of for my whole working life. I can also play music. I can teach, which I enjoy doing. I get to be involved with the community. I couldn't ask for a better place to really explore different things and be a part of the community. It's really a wonderful equation that I get to be a part of.
Yeah, and you live right in the downtown area.
Right downtown. I'm right off Main Street.
Yeah. I know you. I won't say the address, but I know that house because I hung out in that house.
I'm sure you did.
Multiple times before you were in it. It was good. It was a good spot.
A number of people I've met have had parties in my house.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, I wasn't at those parties.
Yeah, they were super fun.
I bet they were. I haven't heard one bad party. The farthest one back is, I hopefully doesn't mind me saying it, because I'm going to say it anyway, is Dave Rally. I'm sure you might know him.
Yeah.
And he was talking about he had parties in that house in the 60s. So
that's as far back
as I've heard. I haven't heard any farther back.
I was part of the Lipari crew parties. Yep. But there was a pool table and they had a lot of poker going on. It was just a good welcoming household. So
the poker continues, but unfortunately the pool table had to go.
Yeah, it was pretty beat.
It was pretty beat up. Yeah. So that's unfortunately gone, but the poker survives.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get into a little bit of one of the reasons why I have you on here, and that is. There's some political races coming up. This is tis the season here. And before we get into what you're running for, can you give us a little bit about what you've run for in the past?
Sure. My first, just to go back a little bit, when I was growing up, I want to kind of give you the mindset that I had when I got involved. My parents were always involved in local politics. So in Prescott, Arizona, where I grew up, it's a little bit larger community. But still similar in the sense that you know quite a few of your neighbors. And my parents' business was set up pretty close to downtown for a long time. And they were involved with local politics. They had done that since the business started on Mill Avenue in Tempe. And there was a real favorable synergy between economic development and community development working hand in hand. And so seeing that happen, I knew in some form or fashion that once I settled in with the community that I would adopt with my family, that I wanted to get involved on some level. And I was really thinking more school board or city council or town board kind of an arrangement, because that's what I had seen my parents do, or also county supervisor or county legislature. My parents were always involved with races, and they didn't care about party. They just care about the person. And so they would sometimes support Democrats or Republicans, and they would support the candidate for, you know, mayor or county supervisor or city council, whichever it might be. And then school board quite a bit too. And so I knew that's kind of where I was thinking. And so when I got to town, I was thinking, well, a school board would be wonderful. My oldest daughter was going to be going into school sometime soon. And so I was thinking, well, I'd like to get involved. That's something I saw tremendous value in when I was in school. But then I was asked by Rich Murphy to run for the county board, because he was the county representative for the town of Oneonta. That's where we lived at the time, was in the town.
Okay.
And he was retiring from the board, and he was looking for someone to replace him. So he asked if I would be interested in running. And I said yes after conversations with him, because he described some of the challenges and opportunities that the county was facing at the time. This was 12 years ago in 2013. So I ran for that against Janet Hurley Quackenbush in the town. The results were positive and negative, I'd say. I would say negative in that she got more votes than me, but positive in that it was a good introduction to the community and the community affairs. The votes weren't so drastically different that I felt rejected by the voters, and that I can continue to be involved and find maybe another pathway. So, and kind of, you know, Janet is a friend now today, so it's running against someone doesn't mean you're enemies for life. You're just on the ballot in different positions for one day, and then after that, you want to be good neighbors. And so Janet's a friend, and I very, very much value that.
That's awesome.
So in 2014, you know, not having the job of the county board rep, the school board came up. So that's where I was thinking to begin with. So I was like, let's give that a go. That was successful.
That's awesome.
And was on the county, the school board for two terms, from 2014 through 2017. They're three-year terms. So there's two election cycles.
And this
for
is
that.
The Oneonta. This is the town.
Well, the school district governs the schools, which encompasses the city and the town.
Yep. So this is the city district of Oneonta, though.
Yeah, Oneonta City School District, which children that live in the town are also part of that district. Okay. So I did that for 2 years, and through the process, I was always thinking about what the next step might be in politics. And you kind of relate to your experience growing up. In Arizona, there's term limits for state legislators, and it's very much, at least when I was growing up, a part-time gig. And so I thought, well, maybe I would do that at some point, you know, and if it's part-time, because, you know, I think that's how representative government should go, is that you don't spend your whole life in government. You kind of come in and out of it.
100%.
And so I was thinking, well, maybe down the road I'll do that. But as I was on the school board, you start to see the dependence that the schools and local government has on the state. And you want to find ways to effectuate positive change to support the schools. Because to me, the most important investment we make in our future is in our students, in our kids. And schools are a big part of that. So ensuring that the programs and curriculum available for every one of our students to match their needs and abilities is critically important. So I started an interest in running for the state assembly, and so I did that a couple times. Very difficult to run though in the for the state assembly because Oneonta has quite a number of Democrats, but in the state system for the assembly, this district is mostly Republican.
Yeah.
And as you've seen in the last 10, 12 years, it's really been polarized where Republicans are really in the camp for Republicans and Democrats are really in the camp for Democrats, which is unfortunate because for many years we had a state assembly member, Bill McGee, who was a Democrat and running in the district that covers Oneonta, and he was being voted for by Republicans because they knew him, they valued him, he knew that he cared about them, and they were not so bound to their party affiliation when they voted. But once that's changed, and so unfortunately I lost those elections. But you learn a lot along the way. You make good connections, you make positive relationships, you put your best foot forward and try to articulate what your goals are for the race, and you make some friends along the way. So, you know, it doesn't feel good to lose a race, but there are some things that you get out of it. And once that race was over, it made, I guess, a positive impression for a number of people, because then the conversation started where I was being asked very gently, maybe licking the wound still from the assembly race, to think about running for mayor, because those are 4-year terms, and Mark Drennan, the current mayor, I think it was already pretty clear that he only wanted the one term, so they were thinking who would be his replacement, and so the conversation started about running for mayor, and here we are.
Here we are. Yeah, the running thing, it was, you remember, Dan and I have known each other for a little bit, and I ran for county as well, and lost by two or three votes. So before I go on.
It stings.
On,
I know, it stings.
Which is fine. I am not upset about the loss. I just wish more people had gone out and voted in general. You know, and I think that's a really important thing. People need to get out and actually vote. Local elections make a big difference. People say, well, my vote doesn't count. Well, it does at the local level.
Absolutely.
Like 100%.
Right. Voting for president, you might feel as if you're a drop in the bucket. But in a local election, it could make the difference, like in your race. And also, the execution of government policies are most seen on the local level.
100%.
Roads and schools and buildings. Code enforcement, all the things that you see that make your life better in the community you live in are generally executed by those closest to you, which are your council members, state representatives.
100%.
So I find value in that because you're close to where the work is being done.
Yep. Okay, so Oneonta mayor, that position, elected position, this is a part-time position?
That's right.
Tell us about what... what is expected, right? Let's just talk about the mayor of Oneonta position itself, because it's a little confusing at times about what's going on and what these things, what these positions are supposed to do. So as you see it, what is the position of mayor of a city about this size entail? Like what are the duties?
Sure. So in my view, I think each person coming into the role is going to look at it a little bit differently because they want to try to articulate some vision and pathway to accomplishment in their term. So I would look at it in that the charter that was voted on in 2011 changed the dynamics of the city government, which moved it away from a sort of a quote-unquote strong mayor position to a supposedly weak mayor position because they instituted a new role of the city manager. And the idea was there was that the city manager would run the day-to-day, sort of be the manager of the city operations, and therefore the mayor wouldn't be bound as much to the day-to-day operations. And so that created a new dynamic of city manager and a mayor role for all those years before that. It was the mayor as the head. I think it's a good way to do it because the responsibilities are increasing in complexity of day-to-day operation of local government. Even on a local level, it can be a complex operation. And so having someone that is there every day as their full-time job, making sure that each part of the running of the government is done correctly, I think is the appropriate way to go. And so a mayor being elected would have it'd be very difficult to recruit a mayor to run and be there full-time in a city this size. So I think it's a good dynamic to have a part-time. So The problem, though, is that the mayor is not a voting member of the council unless there's a tie. So you can't vote. You're not in charge of the day-to-day. So what does the mayor do? The mayor still has the agenda, so they can put forward the schedule, the agenda for each meeting. There is a little bit of control there to see as far as articulating the direction and what is voted on and what is approved. But ultimately, it's the council's decision. And so the mayor's influence, I think, is essentially in trying to help the council come to a consensus, although it's not required, just the majority, to make good decisions. And so I think that's important because since you're not voting, you have a responsibility to help the council make good decisions. And you're the one person in the city council that's elected by every member of the community of Oneonta. So in a sense, you represent everyone, whereas every council member then represents a ward that they were elected to. So I think the mayor is in a unique position because you're trying to guide the council, you don't vote. But you also represent, in a way, every person of the city collectively. So to ensure that the city is doing the things that are most beneficial to everyone, not a particular ward or a particular group. So I think that's what maybe attracts me to the position, is that you are bound by the overall needs of the community, not by a ward, but you're trying to make sure Ward 1 and Ward 8 have shared interests. And so when they make a vote, they can do so knowing that although whatever it is that they're voting for may or may not be in their ward, is still going to be for the greater good of Oneonta.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never kind of thought about it that way. But, that makes complete sense. And, you know, it's funny just looking at these things from outside perspective. Some of these can be what we call thankless jobs at times, and they're tough from my perspective looking at it because – what's the demographic? Sometimes I think about this. I'm like, okay, if somebody's going to run for office, right, you need to be there, right? The pay is not exactly amazing. Should I say that?
You can say that.
Can I say that? I can say that.
Go ahead and say it. Say it again if you want.
I'm going to say it, multiple times. The pay is not very good for most small area elected officials that are on a part-time basis. So it makes it a little tricky if you say, oh, hey, I want to run for something like that. You have to make sure that you have this, you know, a flexible schedule, another job, maybe independently wealthy or retired. So it's a little tricky to be able to run for government for anybody that would wish to. You know, you have to kind of be in the right spot. It seems like with the remote work that you have and your hat in many your feather in many caps out there or whatever, that you're able to do this because of that, which is awesome.
Yes, I'm lucky in that I can do that. I have a job that remote has some inherent flexibility to it.
Yes.
So that helps. That's why I support the system of government because it should be part-time. You shouldn't have to give up your professional life or other parts of your life in order to do local government work.
Yep.
So I want to make this system work because it should be part-time. It should be balanced in the sense that you can do it, and therefore if I do it successfully and show that it can be balanced, other candidates after me will come forward that might have full-time jobs and say, oh, I can see that this is something that I could do too. We've been very lucky that we've had in the past, we've had mayors that have significant professional accomplishment and the time. You know, we had Dick Miller, who was retired from Hardwick as president, and then we had Gary Herzig, who retired from OFO, and then Mark Drenick, who has entrepreneur his own business,
and also kind of moving into
retirement.
Yeah.
So for the last basically 15 years, we've had mayors that, not to say they're retired, but they had they were in a position in their career where they were able to devote significant time to the role, which I'm thankful for, but that's to me not an enduring way that this program should work. We need the program to work so that people in different positions in their professional life can see that they want to serve and that they can serve. And if at the end of my term, if that's something that is demonstrable to others, then I think that would be one thing that signals success in the job.
Awesome. Okay, so in terms of, let's talk a little bit about views and these kinds of things, and there are two things that I'm interested in asking questions about. Number one, what does Oneonta
a need. So I'm going to look at like maybe four or five things that you think that we need to work on in Oneonta. And that can be accomplished by government, right? There are certain things that we need that can't necessarily be accomplished by local government. We can put our efforts in. And then the second thing after that, I'd like to just ask a little bit about, you know, I'm not necessarily one always for, hey, the platform of this, the platform of that, but I think it is important to get people's individual views on particular things. So I'll ask a little bit about that. But first, let's take a look at Oneonta, right? And I personally think that this city is awesome.
Agreed.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's dangerous or whatever, and oh, God, the parking is terrible, and all these things. And as I look through and I go, okay, I go to cities about the same size as this quite often. I travel around a lot because I play in a band and I see stuff. And the overall scope of things, Oneonta is not doing that bad, in my personal opinion, on things that maybe a lot of people would really complain about. You know, like I said, I go to other cities a lot, and I'm like, oh, wow, this problem's way worse here than it is in Oneonta. And I find this city to be a safe, welcoming environment for tourists, for the locals, for the college students, and so forth. So we have this kind of really interesting mix between those three things here, which is awesome. In a very small, I mean, how many people live here? 14,000? Something like, I don't remember.
13, if you're...
13.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Oneonta. What does Oneonta need? What are we looking at here? Where are the biggest problems that you see, or from who you've talked to, about what's going on in the city that the local government can help out with?
Sure. I would start with what is, I think, in the immediate control of the city government, and then sort of branch out from there.
Yep.
I think as far as the needs go from the city, as you mentioned, the parking, there's been a number of projects that have been undertaken in the last few years, like the parking garage being torn down and a parking lot about to open.
Yep.
And the bus depot being moved to that area. That's a significant project for the city, and certainly a costly one. And the budget increases over the last few years, the local tax levy has gone up higher than in previous years. And so that, to me, is a concerning trajectory. If we stay on that, that might be too much increased taxes over a short amount of time. I would suspect, though, that the council members will identify that this is not necessarily an indefinite period of tax increases. So if that slows down, my concern there is that if there's only so many taxing parcels that are available, and the tax burden on those increasing too much could, I think, restrict our ability to provide services for everyone in the future. That'd be a long-term concern.
Yep.
So that's something that in January I'd be looking at, not saying that we have to cut back per se or that we need to reduce taxes in order to survive, but we just need to be careful as far as the growth goes in the tax base, because we are constricted in our ability to grow as a city to add new taxing units. So we have to be very careful. That's my long-term view on the tax part, where it is in the immediate control of the city.
Yep.
But your question, I think, is more interesting in the area of what can we do to keep Oneonta awesome for next year, year after, my kids once they grow up. And you've identified already a few things I think make it unique. We are a community of not one but two colleges. So each year we graduate, I think last year it was about 1,400 students between SUNY, Oneonta, and Hartwick College. So, and we also have the Job Corps, and we have the hospital. So there's a number of things in this area that are I think, very attractive. The baseball, the tourism in the summer is also another
huge,
big thing. So we are very lucky to have an educational, a large educational segment, and a large tourism segment. And I think those are areas where if they grow, So does Oneonta. And I know that SUNY Oneonta and Hartwick have goals to grow and provide an experience for their students that attracts even more students. And many colleges have had the headwinds of low birth rates in the Northeast and the competition between a large number of schools. And unfortunately, we've seen other colleges that have had to close because of poor management and lack of students. So I don't think that's the case here in Hardwick or at SUNY. We've had the same headwinds, but we've been able to reverse some of the trends following the pandemic, where we're starting to see more students come back.
Agreed.
So that's good. That's a really good sign. That says to me that Hardwick and SUNY Oneonta are doing what they can to attract students to their campus, because there's an experience there for students to grow and become graduates of those institutions that are going to be productive in the communities that they decide to enjoy. But 1,400 students every year, we need to keep some of them in Oneonta. I'm very proud that many will leave and be representatives of this community, but I want some of them to stay, because economies change and they evolve over time. The economy of Oneonta today is not the economy it was 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It has to evolve. Industries change. They go out of business. New industries come in. And this is where having an educational institution can be a conduit of new ideas to bring out entrepreneurialism that will bring in those new industries. So in the government's position, we are, I think, a good partner, can be a good partner to the institutions to try to develop those pipelines. Because there is space in the city where if a graduating student has an idea, if they want to create a business, why not in Oneonta? And I think if we can say yes to them in Oneonta, we're going to find new avenues for growth. But the whole goal here, in my view, is that we're not trying to solve our economic challenges with one initiative, but creating an environment where multiple people can pursue their initiatives in an environment that can support them.
Yeah, so I graduate from school, and I want to open up a thing here, and I'm like in Oneonta, and I go, wow, what about housing?
Housing's a challenging one.
Let's talk about this for a second, right? It's a big topic in Oneonta on a lot of different aspects, right?
That we do need to address that as well. It's difficult, though, within the reach of the city government itself as far as what we can do, because we can't necessarily build the house. We have to try to find developers and partners that we can work with to do that. And so I'm hopeful that we can find ways to create housing that is sort of the full spectrum of housing options. So a SUNY graduate, a Harvard graduate, likely probably looking for an apartment, something low cost. But as their career develops and they mature and they maybe start a family, we also want them to have the ability to grow with an Oneonta as well. So move from that apartment to a single family house. We want to be able to say yes to them all along their way. Yeah. If they so choose to stay here. So that means apartments. There's been a number of apartments that have been put online. D Street Lofts, Springbrook have both come online. There's a discussion, I'm sure we'll talk about RSS, that has another housing option. Those are large-scale opportunities. There's also single-family homes. We can drive around the city and see some houses that need some repair, rehabilitation. And if we can get those houses online too, that could be duplexes or single-family homes that can help support the housing needs in the community as well. So if we focus too much on one solution, we unfortunately therefore reject others. And if we can find ways to get those houses rehabbed and new houses built alongside apartments being built, then we're answering the question of increasing housing capacity for everyone.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing. We'll just touch on RSS really quickly. The RSS project, which a lot of people know, was originally slated for the 6th Ward 8 years ago. I don't know why.
Six
years ago. It got nixed by the basically there was an uproar, and it kind of got moved, and then the next proposal was for downtown on Market Street. That got shut down, and now it's looking to come back to the 6th Ward. The thing that is right now is that the RSS owns the property, and it's in the proper zoning for what it wants to be or what it is going to be. So really it's the zoning board that has control over this now. I'm correct on this?
I think you're partially correct. I heard some discussion that it may not be completely zoned correctly, so there may be a zoning. There might be some zoning changes that are required for the project to go forward as propositioned.
Yeah.
But I also heard that it is correctly zoned. So you're correct in the sense that the property is already owned. And so now it's essentially a development activity, not a sales activity like it was for Market Street.
Yes, okay. So, and that's right around the corner from me. I think this is something that would be good for the community personally, and I don't have an issue with it and so forth. Yeah, in terms of housing, that's I think a really big important thing. Some people complain about the cost of rent going up. I it's hard for me to say because I look at other cities and towns, and it's expensive everywhere. What mm-hmm. do you think about our general cost of housing around in this area as compared to other places, or just your personal opinion, I guess, or look at that in terms of what it's costing us to live here, the cost of living in Oneonta?
So it's all measurable in comparison, where we compare to. So I think there are some statistics that show compared to other central New York areas, it's going to be a bit higher on the average cost. If you look at other metropolitan areas, it's probably going to be a little bit lower. So it depends on what your measuring stick is and what you're comparing it to.
Yep.
But in my view, as far as how we solve for it, if we can get the housing costs lower, that's obviously more attractive to get more people here. But it's a supply and demand problem. If the supply is low, the prices go up. Supply is high, the prices go down. So this is where if we increase capacity for housing, prices should go down, or at least not go up as much. So for an apartment or for a single-family house, the problem that comes in this area is that, unfortunately, the way the dynamics are, the economics, the construction rehab costs can quickly outpace the market value of housing. So if you have that sort of negative equation, it makes it unattractive for investors to look at building an apartment or building a house and then trying to sell it because the numbers just aren't there. So this is an area where I think the city can be a positive influence, like on those properties that are in poor condition, because they may be beyond the risk appetite of an investor to want to take on that project and put that house back into habitational condition. So the city, in my view, can take on that risk. That's the public taking on the risk of rehabbing houses and putting on more houses onto the market. And so this is it's a risk appetite equation, and I think the public should take it on because it's a greater benefit to the overall community. It's just that the numbers aren't as attractive. But I'm not looking at it as an investor. Would the investor be looking at it to make some sort of a percentage return? If we look at it as we put in some investment, we can recoup that on face value and then have a habitational unit that is accessible for the long term, 15, 20, 30 years, then I think we've succeeded. The ROI to me is the people that we get back to Oneonta, not necessarily the percentage on my investment.
Yeah. Does Oneonta have a homeless problem?
That absolutely depends on who you ask. A number of people look, when you walk down Main Street or you walk down certain areas and you see a homeless person, you'll say, oh, we have a homeless problem. Based on the numbers, it would be say that we probably don't, based on numbers. But most people base their assessment on what they see. And if they see someone or a number of people in a certain area, they might see that there's a problem. I live right downtown. I see a number of people that are homeless near where I live or where my family walks or goes to do things. But I'm not sure we define it as a problem. I don't have any problem with them. If they are sitting on a bench downtown Oneonta, there's no problem in my view with that.
Yeah.
The ability, though, for us to address those challenges, housing challenges, are often coupled with other challenges that person may be experiencing. It's not just not an inability to access an apartment. There's might be some social services that are required that the county and the city can maybe try to address. And sometimes the city police department can as well. So I don't view it as a problem, but there is a need. And I think the measure of a good community is how we take care of those that are most vulnerable. And those are those that are require social services or maybe unable to take care of themselves to a certain degree. And if we can find solutions for them, then we're doing, I think, right by everyone in our community.
Can the local government extend the services for homeless shelters and also social services? What role would this local government have in that? Because it seems like it'd be nice to have more beds at night, right?
It would. And this is going through the social services through the county. And
okay.
I'm not sure the full condition of the ability of the county to provide those services. It is challenging for them to find staffing And also they have tremendous budget cuts coming at them.
Yep.
The federal government has decided to take a very drastic approach to budget, which is going to hurt a lot of people, especially in our area. And the county is going to be faced with some very difficult decisions. And so the challenges that we face are going to become more challenging in some areas. And so as we speak right now, I'm not sure what they are because they're still being worked through as far as what kind of funding is available for various services. And if those funding sources are reduced, cut, or otherwise made difficult to access, it could expand some of the challenges that we see already.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's like a very negative look at it. But
No.
We are bound by what other agencies do.
That's
and
true.
When the federal government decides to take certain actions and cut certain funding, that has a dramatic effect.
It trickles down on everything in the
world. It does trickle down, and it has an immediate effect on small communities because you see it very quickly. And
that's right.
That does make me very nervous about what's coming in the next few years as the federal government makes its decisions, and we try to rationalize it to some degree, if that's even possible, and how that affects us, because we have to make decisions on the local level based on some of the conditions that are put upon us by the federal government.
Yes, and I'd like just to input one thing. Once again, going to multiple cities a lot, traveling around. My daughter lives in New York City. I play in a band where we play 60 to 70 gigs a year, so I'm traveling around to cities all the time and playing. And looking at what some people would call a homeless issue, this is everywhere in the United States, and Oneonta is it's a smaller section than a lot of other cities I go to in mm-hmm. which I see the issue. Now, is that downplaying it? No. I think we obviously need some help in there, you know, especially from the upper government giving us funds to help out and stuff like that. But I would like to say that I think it's still pretty safe here.
Yes, anytime. I agree. It's safe in Oneonta by and large.
Yes.
Doesn't mean crime doesn't happen. But anytime I've had a need, I've had to call the police a few times on a few homeless, I think they're homeless people around the neighborhood. It wasn't for, I was concerned about their well-being because they seemed to be in a moment where they were maybe in crisis. And every time I've called the police, they're there immediately.
It's awesome.
With helping hands.
Yep.
And so I think that's also the measure of a good community in that we're doing the best we can to take care of the people that are within the boundaries of our community. And I hope to continue doing that. And I'm glad that the police are aware of it and trying to help. And various agencies are trying to help. And I think that's a good sign. We will find a solution. It's not the same solution for each person, but there's a way to help them because there's a willingness to.
Okay. So three things that Dan would like to work on if he is elected mayor of Oneonta. This is important. This is a platform kind of thing. And once again, when I look at platforms, I don't necessarily think that somebody who has the platform is like, I'm in charge of this. I need to do it. This is whatever, because you're an elected official and really should be the constituents are really in kind of control of whatever. But it is nice to know where you stand on particular things. I'm not going to ask any specific things, but I would like you to, if you can, three things that you would like to work on with the city if you are elected mayor.
So the three things, as a sort of a setup, when I've talked to voters and I talk to people in the community, it sounds sort of a not the right answer, but I very rarely lead with a platform because I find that when you talk to someone and you say, I've got all the answers, they're like, well, why should I tell you what I think then? And I find that you learn a lot from people just by not saying anything and hearing what they have to say. And what I've gathered from the people I've talked to, and it sort of focused my ideas on things that we can do, is that generally speaking, we need to increase the accessibility of Oneonta. That could be in different forms, from developers that want to build housing and want to open businesses or want to move here with their families. We'll call it the arena of accessibility.
Okay.
It could be parking, it could be housing, it could be economic development. We need to make Oneonta more accessible. Second is which kind of leads off of that, is where are the things that are available in Oneonta that are maybe underutilized or could be expanded? And I think the tourism area is an area where we can expand. And I think if we get the Oneonta Theater reopened, that's going to have a dramatic expansion of tourism in this area. And with expansion of tourism will be expansion of other opportunities for businesses that are on the peripheral of tourism activities. So if that could be reopened, that would be wonderful. That's over 100 years old, that building, and it's a wonderful theater, but it's been shuttered for like 8 years now.
Oh, yeah, and I played on that stage. I've done a lot of stuff there, and it was awesome when it was open.
And just think, we can, if we get that reopened, that can happen again. To me, that's in the area of trying to grow the size of Oneonta figuratively and literally, in the sense that we want more people here. We lost people between 2010 and 2020. We need more people back. Mark Drenick mentioned that quite a bit when he was running for mayor, and also through his term, that we need to get more people back, and I definitely agree on that. And so the theater, in my view, would increase activity, and increased activity is going to bring other benefits to the city. So that might be the only tourism thing, but that's the one thing that we can all see where it is.
Sure.
So we have accessibility, we have expansion of certain activities. And then as far as what I want to do as well is, we talked about Harbor College, SUNY Oneonta, and sort of the relationship that they have with the community. And I want to find ways to incorporate more interactions with Harwick, SUNY, and the city. On Saturday, I went down. There was a Hispanic Heritage Party on Miller Plaza.
Yeah, I saw that.
Led by a combination of the SUNY Activities Association and the Latino Association on Harbor College. And I think that's a perfect example of colleges working together and taking it right downtown so the community can be a part of it as well. So repeat those kinds of activities. And we start to get this inertia and this clear positive relationship between the city, the community, and the institution. So that would be the third area where I would like to see we can grow those opportunities and expand that relationship.
It'd be awesome to get the O-Fest back down into the park or something.
They would.
Where it's like, I remember the first couple of those, and they were insane and awesome. And the whole city, everybody came together and had a really good time. And it kind of got whittled down for multiple reasons, but it'd be awesome to have that back.
I would like to see that. Those kinds of things, we don't have to think more beyond bringing back certain things. Bring that back, and then that might stir some other ideas.
100%. Favorite pizza. Now people are gonna get you can say a couple of them if you wish instead of just one.
I will never tell you what is my favorite pizza in Oneonta. They are all delicious.
I agree.
I'll tell you, I make homemade pizza at home, so I'll say do. That's if you were to ask my wife and kids, they'd better say it's mine.
That's right. That's amazing. All right, so if you're waking up in the morning and you're going to look at your phone, you're going to put some music on, what's the first, what would you put on?
Music in the morning?
Yeah, you wake up in the morning, you're kind of leaving, you're going to get in your car. If you're not putting the radio on, if you get to choose something to put on.
Okay, so
first thing that pops into your mind.
The first thing that pops in mind is what I do when I drive my kids to school is I put on like 103.9 and I blast it and open the windows as we pull up to the school, because I get a very cherry red face from my daughters when I do that.
Amazing.
That's
like the pop version of the banjo radio group,
right? Yeah. So it's really fun. I just crank it, and they're so embarrassed. And then I'll you know, do some corny dancing to it as I'm driving away, like, hey, have a great day.
That's incredible.
And, but if I'm by myself and I'm just going to turn on the radio by myself and turn something on, I certainly fluctuate in what I like to listen to, but I just got 4 CDs from Kieran Kane and Raina Gellert. They came to Oneonta about a month ago for the Oneonta Concert Association, and he is wonderful. I think I'm finding myself gravitating to folk and bluegrass music more lately, and those two together are just wonderful. I can listen to them all day.
Well, you have a CD player?
Yeah, you know what that is?
No. You know, I donated a lot of CDs to the public library. I had a ton of them, and I gave them away, and I collect vinyl now, so yeah.
Well, they gave me 4 CDs.
Amazing.
And they signed one compact of them for me, disc. Compact discs, and I got a CD player and a vinyl player, so.
Wow, look
at
you
and
go.
A cassette player. We have cassettes, CD, and vinyl at home,
wow,
so right now I'll open the drawer and put in the CD from Kieran Kane and Raina Gellert. That's what's on my mind lately, but that might shift next time I talk to you.
Awesome. So we want to thank Dan Butterman for being here today and talking all things Dan Butterman. A couple small things before we head out. So the election is November
4.
4th. Early voting starts?
The 25th.
25th of October, right? And most people in the city are going to be voting at Foothills, correct?
So early voting is going to be down by the pond. Is it the Brenner Building and Neyawa Park? That's where early voting is going to be set up.
Yep.
And then Election Day voting will be at Foothills in the city. Fun fact, Harbor College has done a tremendous amount of work to register students to vote.
Great.
And since they passed the threshold, a triggering threshold, they will now have a polling site in, I think, the Golisano Building on Harbor Campus for day election day voting as well.
Amazing.
So it's a very positive trend that the Harbor College of Public Institute of Public Service has done a tremendous job getting students involved with the city government right now and with voter registration. And that's going to benefit all of us because every voice that speaks up is better for the community, and votes are one way of doing it.
Great. So, okay, if there's a couple, if I want to know more about Dan Butterman, where do I go?
You haven't learned enough just now. This isn't enough.
No, it's never enough. Okay. We want more, more, more. So if public events and or websites.
Sure. The best thing is to look on either Instagram or Facebook. Yep. Are you aware of Facebook?
I am aware of that.
Okay, you are. Okay.
Yep.
So there's an event tonight at the B-side starting at 5 o'clock. That's free. It's partially a fundraiser, though. I'll be glad to take donations, but it's not required to attend. And okay. Then there's going to be a candidate forum on October 11th at Wise Guy Sammy's.
Yep.
And then there's going to be a co-hosted by Harvard College, Suno Nyanta, and the Chamber of Commerce, a candidate night on October 28th at the Foothills. And I'm looking to do one or two more town hall community conversation types of events in between those events, probably in the next 2 weeks. So check it on Facebook for the events page. You'll find that information. You can find out more information about me there. There's a phone number. There's also my email. I try to be easy to get a hold of.
Yep. And Butterman is two N's.
Yeah, if you forget the N, then you won't get a hold of me.
That's right.
Yeah, Butterman, B-U-T-T-E-R-M-A-N-N. For mayor at Gmail, or you can call me or message me. I try to be very easy to get a hold of. And I live right downtown. You'll probably see me walking around.
Awesome. Yes. The other thing is, too, if anybody wants to, you can always listen to, re-listen to this interview if you wish, or share it with other people. If you go to wonyfm.com, not org, wonyfm.com, and go to recordings, you can find the recording of the day. It'll be the 9 a.m. one for this day, and you go back and listen to it if you feel like sharing it. If you go to wonyfm.org, that is where you can live stream everything. That does not have the recordings on it, so there are two Wonies that are out there that you want to kind of pay attention to. So, Dan, thanks a lot for coming on. Good luck in your candidacy, and we look forward to hearing more and seeing you about Oneana.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me, Mark. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and remember, vote November 4th. Students listening, register and vote. Oneonta needs you.
Rock and roll. We're going to leave you with some Chuck Mangione just because we're feeling so good right now.